Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Sorry about last night. Even intrepid conversation radio hosts get rather crank once in a while. That's all I can say is I felt kind of last night. And trust me when I say that when I felt last night, it was far too to be behind a microphone. You don't want to be around me even at tremendous distance when I'm feeling That's a complicated professional medical diagnosis, by the way. But I'm not anymore. No, I'm just... Now, today we went to the doctor and found out that Ferg is cleared to play ball. Now, if he was pitching... If it was baseball and he was pitching, he'd still be on the 15-day disabled list. He wouldn't even be day-to-day. And I kind of had that conversation with him. I said, son, linebackers, tight ends, and offensive tackles, well, they all have their gifts. But, son, left-handed pitchers are little gifts from God. His answer, yeah, Dad, but can I play? Don't! So he should be coming through the door all hot and sweaty any minute now. Went out and got him a brace for his elbow that would keep it from being impacted. The doc said, no, not broken. That's a growth plate. That's not a break. But he played with his arm some, this orthopod, and said, you got some ligament damage, boy. Ferg's response, yeah, but can I play? Which reminds me, a program note for you all. The first game of the season is Thursday. So I am not permitted to miss that. If you know what I mean? It's one of those things that came with the turf about 13 and a half years ago when he was born. So we'll be a repeat or some such on Thursday evening. Sorry about that, but it's absolutely, it's just not something you can miss. The dads in the audience and the moms will get that. So where do we begin this evening? Because there is all kinds of evil out there. Right-wingers, of course. And there was plenty there was plenty from last night that we could have hit. Last night would have been a very much full plate for us. And we'll probably hit some of that later on. You know, we are smack dab on top of the anniversary of Katrina. And something must be said. I just don't know what that something is. And I'm not trying to any degree to be a smart aleck about it. I'm really not. But I don't know what you do say about the horror that has continued to be the attempt of the Gulf Coast and New Orleans to come back from Katrina. I don't know what... You already know all the... Merely thinking about it and thinking about how the government of the United States failed because the people leading the government of the United States at that time, to wit, namely, the George W. Bush administration, wanted it to fail so they could say, see, I told you, government can never be the solution. And they did. And they used floating bodies in fetid water as proof. All we can do is note this time. And in noting this time, all we can do is swear never again. Never again. For the sake of everyone who suffered through the failures of the Bush administration in Katrina, we say never again. For the sake of everyone living along any coastal area of the United States that is likely to be struck by a hurricane, we say never again. Never again. If you want to add more, I welcome you to do so. But the dead are still dead, the dying are still dying, the forgotten are still forgotten. And we try at least to remember them. And to say, never again. Last night, because I wasn't sleeping so well, I gave up and watched a little bit of the Idiot Box. And this sort of ties together because it's the same mindset. I went over to the Travel Channel and I caught the repeat of the brilliant segment that Anthony Bourdain and his crew did on Beirut back when Israel was murdering it. And in one of those segments, Anthony Bourdain, looking back and describing what went on, said, we were all hungry for information. Everybody was on their cell phones. So-and-so had a friend whose uncle worked for CNN, and they were trying to get information there. Or trying to get something through the press. Through the media, hungry for information as the Israeli fighter jets flew overhead and bombs fell into neighborhoods and slew infants in their cradles. Anthony Bourdain went on to say, at the end of the day, the best bet was some guy down on the street who said, next they will hit this apartment, next they will hit that apartment, and sure enough, the next thing you knew, the big explosion, or now they will hit the airport. If you've never seen that episode, I highly recommend it, and it is for sale, I think, over at iTunes. Same place many of you listen to this program. Beyond that, however, there was a comment he made wherein he said, and those of us who were American waited in vain for some sort of comment on what was happening from our government. But we got nothing save for some video footage of the President of the United States buttering a roll and mumbling something while Tony Blair tried to get his attention. And you could tell watching it the sense of disgust that Anthony Bourdain had in describing that situation. And, you know, that was another one of the Bush administration's let-them-eat-cake moments over those 8 long, tormented, tortured years. And it was then that sort of bleary-eyed, that I realized, and in conjunction with an email that I had had from our pal Kate, who spent so much time trying to relieve some of the suffering down along the Gulf Coast, that I realized that there are no adequate words to be said on this or any other anniversary of Katrina. It was in the middle of one of these reruns as I sat there with wanting to sleep but really not able to, that I saw an advertisement for Come to the Casinos of Mississippi. Because, you see, if you run a casino in Mississippi, Katrina never happened. If you run a casino in Mississippi, it's a party every day. And the dead were never in the trees. And that's sort of when it all dawned on me. So let us commemorate Katrina by making a personal pledge to ourselves and each other that we will do everything in our power from ever, for as long as we live on planet Earth, from ever, 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 letting a godless, soulless, motherless, conscienceless, sociopathic, repig-licking, punk-ass bastard get hold of the White House again. Because Katrina is what happens when we do. Katrina is what happens when we don't work hard enough. Katrina is what happens when we don't surround the Supreme Court of the United States as they contemplate something called Bush v. Gore and hand the presidency to that jug-eared, pig-eyed little lout. That is the meaning of never again. It would be nice if we could say never again here in Appalachia. But all we've learned how to say is the again part. We haven't quite gotten around to never. A few years ago, a toddler was killed when a boulder came flying off a mountain removal quarry site, went through the roof of his home, and landed squarely on him as he slept. The coal company paid $15,000 or $20,000 and cried all the way to the bank about it. And with the exception of very few, it has largely been forgotten. Forgotten, that is, until this past weekend. In a county that I was in just a week or so ago. Floyd County, Kentucky. Floyd County, Kentucky is a beautiful place. The meeting that I attended took place at Jenny Wiley State Park. It's another one of those state parks named after another one of those women who was kidnapped by the Indians and then ran away because the Indians wanted her to bathe every day. You know, 1790s, whatever. And as we drove out around the park, we realized that that exquisite park ground was surrounded on all sides by mountain removal. And we realized that the mildewy smell inside our hotel room, the lodge there, if you will, the mildewy smell there was because it had been fairly recently flooded. Because, again, it has mountain removal all around it. Flooding from man-made acts of gross negligence is not limited to low-lying areas along the Gulf Coast. The lodge was high enough above the lake level that flooding should never have reached it, but it did. I almost forgot what it was that I was smelling when I walked into the room until the light went on for me, and I remember the last time, oh, so very long ago, the last time, 1999, that we had a vacation, and we stayed on the Alabama Gulf Coast down on what they call the Redneck Riviera, or we like to call L.A., Lower Alabama. And I remembered that wet, mildewy smell from the formerly flooded hotel room that we stayed in there. And the light went on. But as I said, we only know in Appalachia again, and not never again. Over the weekend, a piece of what the coal industry likes to call fly rock. It's fly rock. A piece of fly rock came off a mountain removal site in Floyd County, Kentucky, and crashed into a man's home. Fly rock, it sounds so innocuous, doesn't it? I mean, you can make a rock fly. I can make a rock fly. We've got rock gravel paving our driveway. Daddies and little boys make rocks fly at the edge of a pond, seeing who can get the most skips out of a flat stone across the water. Fly rock. But I am looking at this piece of fly rock. I am looking at this piece of fly rock, and it is a boulder like unto something out of a Flintstones episode. Taller by a couple of feet than a human being. Yeah, fly rocks, what happens when you hit a rock with the lawnmower? Thanks, Sue. Exactly. But this is a round piece of what I assume to be sandstone. Again, taller than a man, wider than the height of a man, broader across the beam than the height of a man. And it has flown into the house of a human being. A man's home has been ruined. The penalty for the coal company, $10,000. Nobody was home when Fraser Creek Mining, it's not mining, it's quarrying. When Fraser Creek Quarrying sent their fly rock into the home, the man who lives there is deaf. Had he been home, the consequences could have been horrible. It's not fly rock. It's a giant damn boulder. Maybe fly boulder would be the more appropriate term. $10,000, fine. And a man's home ruined. Two other nearby homes were evacuated. because of concerns that more debris, this is how the Associated Press reports these assaults on human beings, more debris would fall down the hill. In other words, two families' lives were deliberately interrupted because of the gross negligence and the willful, wanton, and reckless conduct of Fraser Creek Mining in its relentless pursuit of holy profit, and had to leave their homes. As noted, this was not the first such event, nor will it be the last, because just as I have exhorted you and myself to say never again about Katrina, most of the nation has not made that commitment. And most of the nation barely even knows about the war in Appalachia, the assaults on our homes and our family values by coal companies relentlessly driven to seek more profit. And so, as I say in Appalachia, we don't say never again. In Appalachia, we only say again? Again? Again. So that's a beginning point this evening. But by all means, let's not sit here and haul out the sackcloth and ashes just yet and rend our garments and tear at our hair. Because as long as there is a right wing out there, God knows there's going to be right wing lunacy, and we get a giggle at it. The latest paranoid machinations from the thin gray settlings that puddle between the ears of the right wing and pass for brains in their weird little world. A report coming from a right-wing rag website called The New Ledger. That claims Nancy Pelosi, well, you know, she's a liberal. She hates America because liberals hate America. And the New Ledger reports, as of yesterday, in a report by Brad Jackson, a story entitled, "Why Does Nancy Pelosi Have a Problem with Patriotic Music?"
If you've ever been stuck on hold with a congressional office in the past, at least you've been able to enjoy some good patriotic music.
Onward, Christian soldiers, bombing brown folks to bits. You know, that kind of stuff. I don't know, John Philip Sousa, what? The national anthem played over and over. And you know, it's a good thing we don't remind that these right-wingers that the national anthem was a drinking song. Whose music was lifted and applied to the lyrics that were written by Francis Scott Key. Let's don't do that. They'd probably go shoot something or someone. You can't say that our beloved, holy, sacred national anthem was a drinking song one.
But it was.
I don't care. You can't say it.
If you've ever been stuck on hold with a congressional office in the past, at least you've been able to enjoy some good patriotic music, as opposed to the lilting tones of generic smooth jazz that have been dry.
Okay, I'm not so crazy about cool jazz, but that's okay. I don't have to. Cool Jazz 101. That was Kenny G.
No. As opposed to the lilting tons of generic smooth jazz that have been driving elevator users insane for decades. Horse feathers.
What did I say? What did I say? I heard, what did I hear on the Muzak the other day? Oh, yeah, I know. Yeah, I think I mentioned it on the air. I was somewhere and just sort of, ding, you know, like that, like one of the little puppies on the old RCA Victor label. You know, his master's voice, ding, with the little head cocked and the ear up. And I realized I was listening to the Muzak version of Wish You Were Here by Pink Floyd. Yes, and it was David from Maine, I think, who mentioned that, yes, you can also hear the Muzak version of Smells Like Teen Spirit. So it ain't just smooth jazz, which, you know, that's another right-wing thing. You know, they're just not very smart, these wingnuts. But anyway.
For years, congressional offices have played patriotic anthems as the background music during hold times. Not anymore. After we were startled by the hold music when we called a... Who is Brad Jackson, this guy writing the article? We,
the Queen of England? After we were startled by the hold music when we called the House office recently, sources on Capitol Hill informed us this week, that the Democratic House leadership has made a sweeping decision that congressional offices now have the options of smooth jazz elevator music or no music at all.
Michigan Republican Fred Upton sent a letter to House Chief Administrative Officer Daniel Beard, who reports to House Speaker Nancy Pelosi this week to protest this decision. Upon contacting CAO Telecommunications, it has come to my attention that as of Tuesday, August 11th, all holding music was changed at your request from the traditional patriotic songs to elevator music. CAO Telecommunications affirmed that congressional offices currently have no choice in the genre of music played, but merely are given the option between the elevator music on hold or no music at all, despite the fact that we've had the patriotic music for years.
Jesus criminy. This is what the right wing puts out there to piss and moan about. On the anniversary of Katrina.
No, really.
So this is, of course, a vast conspiracy to keep people on hold from feeling appropriately patriotic when calling their congressional representatives. Jeff Ventura is the spokesman for the aforementioned Chief Administrative Officer Daniel Beard. He said the music was changed during recess as a pilot program in an attempt to offer offices a choice of hold music. Let's do that again professionally without botching the words. The music was changed during recess as a pilot program in an attempt to offer offices a choice of hold music. This had nothing to do with the leadership, not in the beginning or in the final outcome.
It did. It had to. It had to. That Nancy Pelosi, she's such a commie.
So, you know, the congressional offices have, since there has been hold music, which followed some few couple of decades after, since there has been a hold button, you could have music or no music. And as it turns out, the CD that was in the congressional Muzak system for what is described as a long time was a patriotic tunes CD. Now, the office of the chief administrative officer wanted to try out some other stuff, so the first disc that they came to was Cool Jazz, Smooth Jazz. Hey, that was Earl Klugh. You know, that was Kenny G. Coming up, the Yellow Jackets. Now I'm going to get email about Kenny G, Earl Klugh, and the Yellow Jackets. Jesus. So that's just what they put in. Because apparently a lot of corporate America out there, remember the people that that the right wing liked to emulate so much and point to as the shining example of how our government should be run? Remember when George Bush said, I think we ought to run our country like a corporation and the president should be like a CEO. I want to run America like that, like Enron. And guess what? He did. Now, what I don't get is why, since it's that cool jazz is what people have on hold in corporate America, why isn't Brad Jackson bitching at corporate America? Instead of trying to make stuff up about Nancy Pelosi. But no, corporate America can do no wrong. So the next time you're sitting around the dinner table and your right wing beloved family member says,
I heard that Nancy Pelosi has killed all the patriotic music because she's a godless communist who drinks human baby blood.
You can just say, Granny, shut up and go back to your strained peas or we'll have to get the Thorazine dart out again.
Okay, I'll be quiet.
And so there's that. And there is a ton of other stuff, too. My God. August is traditionally such a dull month for politics, but baby, it's September now, and it's going to get fun again. This has been probably one of the most enjoyable Augusts politically that we've had in a while. And we have the birthers and the tenthers and the deathers to thank for it. And you know who the tenthers are, right? They're that crowd led by humorless, dope-smoking libertarians who claim that the government can't do anything because the Tenth Amendment stops the government from doing everything. It's just the ultimate Trump card. No, not Trump, like, you know, bad hairpiece Trump. No, it's the Trump card. And, oh, I've got a tenther here. This is just precious. They had a town hall protest in San Diego this past Saturday, at which some mouth-breathing, knuckle-dragging tenther wingnut tried to make his point in front of the camera. This is precious.
Our leaders, the people like us, the left and the right, I want us to stand up to them and
society does not work apart from God and God's rules. He is the author of government. Our encouragement to America is to repent, turn back to the living God, fall on your face in humility and ask God to save your country. God will take care of it.
Actually, if you fall on your face, it's not going to be in humility. It's usually embarrassment. I mean, I've done it before. I'm kind of a klutz, and I've been walking down a completely smooth floor, and I can trip over individual molecules, and I fall on my face, and it's not in repentance. It's in embarrassment when I get it. Anybody see that? And then you have to laugh at yourself. But anyway. Yeah, but you get my meaning. And we are still not sending. How about that? All right, let's stop this for just a minute. So anyway, as I was saying when computer technology so rudely interrupted me, and us, and you, and we, let's see, where were we? Tenthers and wingnuts and weirdos and, those people. Yeah, let's pick them back up again. Remember, we were supposed to fall on our faces and repent and return to God. By the way, these people are all protesting out there and yelling at people to get a job. Why aren't they at theirs? Just saying.
Health care. God will take care. The children of Israel...
Oh, wait.
Society does not work apart from God and God's rules. He is the author of government. Our encouragement to America is to repent, turn back.
And all this time that I thought the author of the Declaration of Independence was Thomas Jefferson, Ben Franklin, John Adams, and, Thomas Jefferson, Ben Franklin, and John Adams. But, you know, it just goes to show what I know. God writ the government.
Back to the living God, fall on your face in humility and ask God to save your country. God will take care of health care. God will take care. The children of Israel wandered in the desert for 40 years and their sandals were not even worn out.
Right here.
Because he was there. Now, this is the precious one. This is the precious one. Hang on to this. Sit down. This is one of those Bill Hicks, peace be upon him, strap in moments. This is a dude with his American flag T-shirt on because he loves flags so much he wants to desecrate it by wearing it. And remember, this is San Diego, California. This is not West Virginia or Alabama or somewhere. This is supposed civilization.
God to save your country. God will take care of health care. God will take care. The children of Israel wandered in the desert for 40 years and their sandals were not even worn out.
Right here. I got a book here called the USS Constitution. I'm sure everybody has seen this before. And do you know what? I've read this book 3 times now, and I've referenced it dozens of times, and you know I can't find one little paragraph in here that says that the government has the right to take over our health care.
Yep, it's a book called the USS Constitution. The keel for the USS Constitution was laid in 1799 and was made of oak that was timbered near Nallon in what is now West Virginia. No, that's the... Oh, wait a minute. It's the... Oh, he held it up. It's a book called the U.S. Constitution, not the USS Constitution. Jesus. Let's try that U.S. Not the USS Constitution. I tear her tattered ensign down, long may it wave on high, and many an eye has... dance to see that banner in the sky. That was Oliver Wendell Holmes Sr. writing the poem that saved the USS Constitution from being scrapped, but never mind, don't tell the Tenthers. Let's see, the Constitution does have these words in it, empowering Congress, quote, to lay and collect taxes, duties, imposts, and excises, to pay the debts and provide for the common defense and general welfare of the United States. And that's not even in the preamble where, you know, we the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, connected to achieve... No, that's in the actual body. Because remember, Fat Pony Scalia says that the preamble of the Constitution ain't law. That's just the... Oh, I don't know. That's the cherry and the whipped cream on top of the... great fudge walnut brownie hot fudge ice cream sundae that is the United States Constitution. The preamble don't count. But it's down there in Article 1, which does count, where it says Congress has the power to lay and collect taxes, duties, imposts, and excises, to pay the debts and provide for the common defense and general welfare of the United States. Common defense and general welfare of the United States. General welfare. I want a constitutional amendment right now banning the word welfare from the Constitution. Damn it. Don't need no welfare in our Constitution. It's them welfare queens is killing America right now, taking us down the road to dirty, filthy socialism. Beauty is only skin deep. But stupid goes all the way to the bone. And what do you do? The right-wing lunatics. And they are. They're just nuts. And it would be okay if they were just nuts. They would be even humorous. But this is the same crowd that's taking guns to meetings. And speaks in eliminationist language and hopes you die. Preferably violently. Or at least miserably. Because you won't fall on your face and humiliate yourself to God. And get some of them sandals that don't wear out when you walk in them for 40 years like the Israelites did. Magic sandals. We're down to magic sandals now, friends and neighbors. You know what? Them sandals was blessed by God. That's why they've never shown up in an archaeological site. They are still being worn by the descendants of the children of Israel to this here day. And they ain't giving them up because they ain't wore out yet. You know how it is. That's why they ain't none of them in a dig. That's why there's no archaeological evidence of any 40 years of what you'd think thousands and thousands and thousands of people wandering around in a desert before they'd take a dump here somewhere or break a clay pot or lose a shoe or throw away a shawl or build a campfire. Nope, 40 years living on nothing but manna and following that pillar of fire in the desert. Never left a scrap of evidence. Not one. Nowhere. Because none of it wore out. Their sandals didn't wore out, and their robes and their raiment, which of course God explained to them that a man shall not put on the raiment of a woman, nor a woman put on the raiment of a man, even though the raiment looked surprisingly identical. You know, everybody was wearing a shift. None of it wore out. They didn't even lose no head. Nobody even died. No bones, no burials, nothing. It's like they flew on a magic carpet right across the Sinai Desert, but it was a 40-year flight. That's why they call it the flight out of Egypt. See? Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Kevin from Brooklyn.
Hey, Kevin, what's up?
How you doing?
Yeah, well, you know, you hit these little bumps in the road, and you hope you just hang on to your train of thought and your energies.
These fire-breathing knuckle-dragging, I'm quoting you, if you allow me to.
Mm-hmm. Mouth-breathing. Mouth-breathing knuckle-dragging, yes.
Yeah, okay. They need to stop quoting the Bible. Okay? Because a lot of the stuff they're quote-unquote quoting has been so misconstrued. I don't even think any of them have really studied the Bible. Okay?
Yeah.
And forget to realize and understand that two-thirds of the Bible, I'll even go further than that, maybe 80% of it is history. It's the history of one of the few, let's say, wandering nomadic people who happen to worship one god. Because most of humanity were pagans. They worshiped multiple gods. But this is very well documented history of a people who happen to worship one god. And the significant characters.
Well, you know, the ancient Egyptians, Kevin, were meticulous record keepers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and this year the Nileometer showed that it was how many cubits high, and therefore we understood that they had a handle on their natural world to the extent that folks of that technological era could have a handle. They had as good a handle as could, and they wrote prolifically. And do you realize that there's nothing about that in their histories?
Of what?
the flight out of Egypt? Nothing? Not there. What you do get is reference to a nomadic people that are referred to as the Hapiru. Mm-hmm. H-A-P-I-R-U. In fact, if you go search around our buddy Eugene Finnerman's site, FinnermanWorks.com, you will find him discoursing on this a little bit. Apparently, the whole flight out of Egypt thing may be entirely made up.
Oh?
Yeah.
Wow.
And hence, no bones, no campfires. No, you know, when you camp 20 or 30,000 people for a while, you're going to leave a mark on the land. You just are. I mean, but this wasn't 20 or 30. This was hordes and hordes and hordes and hordes. So look, anybody who treats the Old Testament as history like the literalists do, you know, that's where you wind up having to believe in talking snakes and chatty water moccasins and gossipy cottonmouths and loquacious cobras and things like that.
Well, a lot of them do. Why do you think they have their snake handlers?
No, that's true too.
Yeah, but it's just so little of it is about governing one's life.
Right, arbitrary rules saying thou shalt not eat oysters on the half shell.
Yeah.
Thou shalt not wear polyester cotton blends. But you got to admit it was pretty sharp of them to. And you know what? I don't wear polyester cotton blends either.
I wouldn't either. And actually, eating shellfish in desert climate is a pretty good idea.
Welcome to hepatitis A.
Yeah.
Thou shalt not eat pork. Welcome to trichinosis.
Exactly. In the desert climate. Yeah. It makes perfectly functioning sense.
But then again, that leads to the husbandry of goats and sheep and the like, and thou shalt apparently have anthrax.
Yeah. Again.
He's God. He misses one now and then.
Yeah. But my thing is, these people need, if they really, and you see, this is why, okay, now, I think you and I will part ways here, because I do believe in God, and I do.
No, I didn't say, no, we're not parting ways. I didn't say I don't.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I don't buy into anyone's particular attempt to quantify or qualify him. In that regard, I share a little bit of common ground with the Muslims. You know, okay. Let's not go painting any pictures of God, because God's sort of unpaintable. You can't pick, my vision of God is of the entire universe.
Okay, which I can grasp, and that's basically my vision too. My thing is, again, these people need to go to the source of the modern day fundamentalist movement, which is the writings of John Calvin and Calvinism.
Yeah, and Darby. Don't forget Darby.
Okay. Yeah.
Because he's the father of all this premillennialist, postmillennialist, millennialist. Mini-millennialist, you know, all of this crap about the end times, Darby's the father of that.
Yeah, and he was about, like, in the 1840s, am I correct?
Maybe the earlier 1800s.
Okay, but Calvinism is what started slave trade, brought a lot of Scotch-Irish people onto the New World through Cromwell. So this is why I hold more roots to the Calvinists. These are the people who created the apartheid state, because the Dutch and Belgian Protestants were very much Calvinist religious people who basically, first of all, mistrust people who treated them humanely, because the Puritans, the Jamestown settlements, even and all that, they all took advantage of the Native Americans, even the Dutch when they brought New York from the Manhattan Indians. Took advantage. It's really the foundation for modern day capitalism.
Yeah, because even in of course one of my favorite books that I've referenced a number of times on this program, To Kill a Mockingbird, I think somewhere around the first two pages, Scout, who is narrating the book, references the fact that old Simon Finch had a break with his Wesleyan brothers because of their proscription on the owning of human flesh. And so he bought himself a few slaves and went up the Alabama River.
Yeah.
But you said, and distrusted people who treated them decently. Well, heavenly days, you know, if you're a dyed-in-the-wool Calvinist and somebody's treating you decently, that obviously means that they have not been shown the true light, because you only treat people decent who are rich like you.
Exactly.
Because you're a member of the elect.
Yeah, the divine elect. Oh, yeah. You know, hell, they probably would have trusted the Indians who acted the same way for the Croton colony. You remember that colony? We just left them alone. Let them die.
Absolutely. You know, if you read the first chapter or so, or the first two chapters of 1491, which continues to be a profoundly influential book for me.
Okay, I got to read that book.
Yeah, Charles C. Mann is the author. If you do that, you will find reference to how the earliest English, French explorers treated their hosts, and how their hosts treated them. How the pilgrims, as we call them, wound up living, being allowed to live there in Massachusetts Bay. Is quite the convoluted tale, and it's not entirely by what you would want. It ain't the history we were taught. Let's put it that way.
Well, what's so sad? If you look at British history, as soon as the Calvinists got a little bit of power, they try to overthrow the monarchy and basically outlaw. You know, outlaw the Church of, you know, the Anglican Church of England and Catholic Church of England. If anything, Henry VIII and Elizabeth were trying to tolerate them because they, for all practical reasons, they needed German allies to fend off the French and Spanish.
Yeah, it was. There was a whole. It was always the position of Britain during that era to oppose whoever was getting strongest on the continent.
Exactly. Balancer of power. And what ended up happening, and this is why they tolerated the writings of John Calvin and Martin Luther. If not, they would still be devout Catholics. Henry was very proud. The only problem Henry had with the Catholic Church is that it kept on getting involved with his private sex life. And he needed some money. Other than that, he was proud to have the title Defender of the Faith.
Exactly. Of course, everybody who had a crown at that point got to be Defender of the Faith. I mean, the French king was Defender of the Faith, the Spanish king was Defender of the Faith, the Holy Roman Emperor, who was neither holy nor Roman, was Defender of the Faith. But, yeah, you put that one on, you put that term on just to show that, you know, you had the reins on. It's like that guy in the video, in the audio that I played a little bit ago, where he said, God is the author of government. No, he's not. You know, that's more of that Pauline garbage. From the same verses where Paul says that slavery is okay, that's the thing. That's the problem. You know, we talk about history in the Bible and of the Bible. These fundamentalists and these right wing, you know, and the tenthers and the birthers and the deathers, you know, most of them are probably biblical literalists too.
They misconstrue. They twist words to suit them so they can have power over other people. And that's what it is. They thrive on people not... I always said history is something that you just don't read and memorize name, dates, and places. It has to be interpreted like you would interpret a business contract or a legal document.
Well, and not just that, Kevin. You have to understand the context in which that psychotic guy who was calling himself Paul instead of his real name Saul because he was kind of on the run.
Yeah.
You know, there's no Interpol back then. Hey, are you that troublemaker named Saul? No. I've heard a lot about it. No, there's a guy that looks like me that goes by Saul. My name's Paul.
Yeah.
And he was a tent maker, and you know, huffing those fumes will rot your mind, as his clearly was. But the reason he was writing all that stuff is that was written to be disseminated by the early Christian church, who were trying to make it abundantly clear at that point in time, because the persecutions had not happened yet, that this new religion, this new Christ religion, you know, we've got to remember, Paul named him Christ. It takes a lot of explaining to a six-year-old in Sunday school in the basement of the Baptist church that his last name's not Christ and his middle name's not H. But that this new religion was not a threat to the empire. That they absolutely, you know, love the empire. You're doing a great job, Mr. Caesar. We just want to worship and be left alone. The Mithras folks, you know, they can continue to be drenched in bull blood. It's okay. The ISIS cult, whatever they're doing, is okay by us. But we're following the one true God who died for us on the cross. And we think you're doing a hell of a job, you're doing a blessed job, because government is sanctioned by God, and everybody should obey the emperor. And so this is, the whole thing was a letter by Paul saying, you know, everybody make it clear that we're not troublemakers, and we won't make any noise. Okay? But by the time Nero comes along, it's during the fires of Rome, which Nero very likely may have had set because he had some massive urban renewal that he wanted to do.
Oh, yeah, he wanted to build Tivoli.
Well, Rome was a city of wood, and he left it a city of stone, and it's true. But he had to have a handy scapegoat, so he blamed it on the followers, you know, and it shows up in the histories. I forget who it was, Tacitus or somebody, I don't know. Who says that it was the fires were blamed on the followers of Crestus, C-H-R-E-S-T-U-S.
Greek for Christ.
Or even a Latin bastardization of Christos. But Crestus. And so, you know, Nero took some members of the early Christian church, dipped them in pitch, jammed them down on spikes and used them to light up his gardens on Vatican Hill.
Yeah.
And hence, that's where the Vatican is today, because it was the site of the earliest so-called Christian persecutions. But they don't know. But the literalists, Kevin, they don't know this.
Yeah. Oh no, they don't. And what they also don't know is that, you know, Jesus himself said, render on what belongs unto God, and render on what belongs unto Caesar.
Yeah. And of course, the Southern Baptist, when we were getting ready to go and rape and murder and pillage Iraq, the Southern Baptist Church used that as the excuse to justify the war.
Well, you see, it's not their version of what God, even though some Baptists and fundamentalist Muslims worship the same God. You know, that's one tidbit. We all worship the same God, basically. You know.
Yeah. So, but you know, you are right in your thesis. These people know very much less than what they say they believe of.
Yeah. I always say the one who claims to study the Bible the most is the one who probably knows the least, or probably has some serious reading issues.
Well, you've got to. And this is just something that I don't know how my mother managed to keep her faith intact, because she studied without ceasing. You know, Sunday school lesson comes around, little Sunday school book says this, mother goes and reads the scriptures and studies and goes and does some history and some textual criticism. And most people don't do that, because everyone, Well, you are so well-read. We are so glad you're in the Sunday school class, until they kicked her out because she refused to move her membership to that particular church, but broke her heart, and I'll never forgive them for it. But never mind, that's personal. But most people don't do that. And certainly the preachers don't do that, because they just want to, in the 14th chapter of Flip-Floppians, the 23rd verse. I mean, okay, do you follow college football at all?
Not really.
Okay. Well, I saw some video footage of the third coming of Christ, otherwise known as Tim Tebow, at the University of Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And do you know the eye black that they use underneath their eyes? You know, I guess it's supposed to cut the glare or something. And now they've got them that's got little white little white product endorsements written in the eye black. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Used to be burnt cork. I don't know what it is now. Well. Tim Tebow has a Bible verse from Flip-Floppians written into his eye black.
Oh, what?
It's Philippians 4:13, I think it was, or 4:22, something like that. But I saw video footage of him the other day, and I just went, oh, my God. You know, enough already. That's like a guy going into the gladiatorial rings with... some St. Paul bling hanging around his neck to go and fight the wild beasts.
Mm-hmm. Well, my thing is that the American church, which for all intents and purposes is I wouldn't even call it Baptist anymore, but it has its roots in Baptist, but it's now evolving into this corporate mega church kind of thing, you know.
Yeah.
So that's the American religion, and I like to think history is repeating itself. When Rome was no longer capable militarily or economically of controlling its empire, they try to get them spiritually, and they use Christianity to do so. Okay? And it's the same thing, America has its roots in the Calvinistic philosophy, and when America is no longer able to control the world and its citizenry economically, militarily, politically, this is an investment, especially the faith-based thing, to maintain an American empire and control its citizenry here and abroad, or whatever, or the empire abroad, through fundamentalist Christianity.
Kind of works, don't it?
Yeah. Well, it worked 2,000 years ago. I mean, 1,500 years ago, when the Roman Empire fell. One thing you can say about the Romans, though, at least...
And what was there to pick up the pieces? Mother Church.
Mother Church, yeah. But one thing you can say about the Romans, they did believe in good government. And this is why I lean more towards, I was raised what Americans call Episcopalian. My people call it Anglican. You know, Catholic light.
Yeah.
That's why I lean more toward, there's logical fundamental, because I do believe in good government, which would be independent of church and corporation.
Indeed. Indeed. Well, Kevin, thank you for the conversation and for the elaboration on our dear friend who wants us to, fall on our face in humility. No. Do you ever fallen on your face and humiliated yourself? I have.
Oh, yeah, and it's not a good feeling.
Makes your face hurt. There's a reason not to do it.
Exactly. That's why God gave us toes.
and some people manage to walk without tripping over individual atoms of air, but not me.
Yeah.
Kevin, have a good night, brother.
Okay, you too, bro. Bye.
Later. Bye. Calling from New York, that's our buddy Kevin. And we will take a quick break, but just a little, since we're doing some history here, a little brilliant historical interlude from the brilliantest, oh, Jesus, most brilliant satirist on the internet, our pal Eugene Finnerman at FinnermanWorks.com, your RDA of irony today. September 1st, the California Zoning Commission in 1772 Medieval Career Counseling, Eugene notes it must have been at least 2 weeks since Father Junipero Serra had built a mission in the territory of California, and with some 15,000 saints in the church calendar, he was falling behind schedule. On this day in 1772, Father Serra founded the mission of San Luis Obispo. Of course, you expect me to divulge, Eugene says. Exactly who Luis Obispo was and why he was so saintly, I won't disappoint you. First, Luis Obispo, 1274 to 1297, was not really Luis, and he was not Señor Obispo either. In fact, he was a Louis, and he didn't have a surname so much as a dynasty, Capet. Capet, French, damn it. The family business was ruling France, but Louis' father was a younger brother and relegated to being a mere Duc d'Anjou. To his credit, the Duke did not attempt to bump off his older brother, the saintly Louis IX. It was Louis IX who was married to Eleanor of Aquitaine, wasn't it? I don't know. I'll get a note from Eugene. Instead, he heard of a vacant throne, so he attempted to make himself king of southern Italy and Sicily. The Sicilians wouldn't have him, and the southern Italians were less than thrilled. The royal house of Aragon had extra sons, too, and they were fighting for the same territory. If the house of Anjou hoped to maintain its precarious throne, every able-bodied son of the Duke was expected to fight. Apparently, Louis did not pass the physical. Be fair, a full suit of armor would require considerable stamina. If a young aristocrat was too frail for war, he obviously would not be encouraged to breed either, so Louis was ordained for the church. Of course, a scion of the royal line could forego the drudgery of parish work. He would not be collecting bells for lepers or directing the student production of a morality play. At the age of 20, Louis was already the Archbishop of Lyon. It was irrelevant that he had never attended a seminary or joined a religious order, neither had a number of popes. Fulfilling such laborious details were left to Louis's sense of noblesse oblige. But in 1295, a decision was forced upon Archbishop Louis. His older brother had died, and now Louis was the heir to the Kingdom of Naples. Since he had yet to take holy orders, there was nothing to bar him from the succession. Of course, he didn't want the responsibility, and the family preferred a more robust younger son as the heir. So Louis joined the Franciscans. He certainly had no problem with the order's chastity and obedience. Louis could even rationalize the vow of poverty because an archbishop was poorer than a king. Ah, poverty. If Louis was no longer heir to a kingdom, as a prince of the church, he was inheriting archdioceses. In 1297, he was appointed the Archbishop of Toulouse. Administering both Lyon and Toulouse exhausted him. He was dead within 6 months. Of course, he now was expected to represent the dynasty and French interests in heaven, if a sainthood would help his celestial status. That could easily be arranged. Pope Clement V, born Raymond Bertrand de Gauquel... Come on, Eugene, you got to help me on the cold reads with the hyphens. Born Raymond Bertrand de Gauquel, coincidence, proposed Louis' sainthood in 1307. And Pope John XXII, Jacques d'Urs, if you are noticing a pattern, formally canonized him in 1317. He was the second saint in the Capetian line. His uncle was Saint Louis the King, so he was revered as Saint Louis the Bishop. In Spanish, that would translate to San Luis Obispo. But why? Why would Junipero Serra name a mission for San Luis Obispo? Louis was a Franciscan, but there was a political motive as well. Since 1701, the royal family of Spain was the Bourbon. Yes, surplus French royalty was always looking for an empty throne, and Spain had one. They merely had to win the War of Spanish Succession. Madrid had basically given the Franciscans all of California to colonize and cultivate. Good manners required at least one mission to be named for a French saint, and Louis the Bishop was a cousin of the Spanish king. Of course, if the Austrian Habsburgs had won the War of the Spanish Succession, Father Serra would have named missions for Santa Hildegund or Madonna of the Lederhosen. So it may fairly be said, notes Eugene, and I agree, that California lucked out. And now you know the rest of the story. No, shame on me. More brilliant work from the internet's most brilliant satirist. And a darn fine historian, too. Eugene Finnerman, at FinnermanWorks.com. If you have not signed up for your RDA of irony, you darned well should. 20 minutes past the hour, we all are almost to the halfway mark of this slightly interrupted Tuesday evening edition of The Horn. I'm Bob. We'll be back. Little musical interlude, followed by the Green News Report from our pals, Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. And then we'll be back with the second half of the second hour, and then the third hour, and you know how that works. Look, these phone lines are here for a reason. Don't let them sit idle. I got a couple of emails to share with you as well. I think you'll enjoy those. But we'll take a little break and come back. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn. You know the number, 877-443-2366.
From his driftwood castle comes a song I've heard before. A scratchy gramophone cuts to the bone. La vie en rose, arpeggios. So the dream began, and the song is amplified by the Beaujolais on Bastille Day. He dances in the tide by the light of
the night. Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Tuesday, September 1, 2009.
We've seen more water tankers up here and firefighters than I've ever seen before.
California on fire. Lights out on light bulbs. Summer of AstroTurf, plus the road to solar.
All of that and more straight ahead from within the Ring of Fire. I'm Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com in Los Angeles.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this is your Green News Report.
They're doing an awesome job. We really appreciate the firefighters.
We certainly do. And yes, these fires are raging out of control, really all around us here in Los Angeles County, and now spreading beyond. What's the latest, Desi Doyen?
Well, California fire season is off to a roaring start with multiple wildfires in Southern California that continue to burn out of control. Now, the biggest in the country right now is the Station Fire in East Los Angeles County. As of Tuesday morning, it's burned over 120,000 acres. That's 190 square miles. Two firefighters have been killed and 53 homes destroyed. Officials have asked the public to reduce their energy use to avoid blackouts as the fire threatens vital power transmission lines. And officials say that other fires in the area appear to have been set by arson. The deputy fire chief called the Station Fire unprecedented for its speed.
Yeah, these things are spreading. We're looking out at gray skies now, really, ashen skies over the last couple of days here in Los Angeles. Triple-digit temperatures for the last several days. Not incredibly high winds, but I understand those high winds will be moving in. The Santa Anas may be coming in tonight, making the job even more difficult for firefighters.
The firefighters may get help from Mexico, however. A very rare Pacific hurricane is moving up the west coast of Mexico and may send some rain. Officials in Mexico have issued evacuation orders for the tip of Baja California in advance of Hurricane Ximena, currently a Category 4. Now, more intense and frequent wildfires and hurricanes are one of the predictions made by climate scientists as a consequence of global warming.
So we don't know that these fires and now this hurricane coming up the coast, we don't know that these necessarily have anything to do with global warming, climate change,
and
so forth.
It's impossible to connect one specific event to global warming, but this is in line with predictions that this will happen more frequently and more intensely.
And it does seem like we're seeing them more frequently, and then we have to look forward once the rainy season comes in, especially out here in California. The mudslides and so forth on the areas that have been burned out through these summer fires.
Thomas Edison invented the first one over 100 years ago, and now it's lights out for the incandescent bulb, which is being phased out in the European Union starting today. Retailers may sell off any stock they have on hand, but they won't be importing any more. Now, the Bush administration mandated a switch for the United States to phase out incandescent bulbs here starting in 2012. Energy-efficient light bulbs use up to 80% less energy and last far longer.
The Bush administration? They wanted us to get rid of the incandescent light bulbs?
Yes.
Why won't the Bush administration get their hands off my light bulbs? Really, I had no idea. So we're going to be getting rid of those in 2012?
Yes.
Obviously, I'm dubious, but sounds good to me.
The summer of AstroTurf continues. AstroTurfing is the term given to fake grassroots organizations that purport to be average citizens but actually are backed by corporations to advance corporate interests.
Backed by millions of dollars in corporate interests,
We've been hearing most about AstroTurf groups using disinformation to gin up outrage over health care reform, but landmark legislation on clean energy is also getting the full treatment. First, we had the scandal of the forged letters purported to be from civil rights groups that were sent to some House members to attempt to trick them into voting against clean energy legislation. The letters were part of a PR campaign paid for by the American Coalition for Clean Coal Electricity. Now we know that the clean coal people knew about the forged letters 2 days before the big vote in the House, but neglected to inform legislators. And we've discovered now that the temp employee that sent those letters was paid a productivity bonus for sending out so many letters. The employee was hired for only 7 days, but he was given the productivity bonus before they say they discovered the letters had been forged and had been sent.
I gotta go to work for these guys.
Now, Talking Points Memo has obtained the call scripts used by Bonner & Associates, the PR firm that explicitly instruct employees to lie and pretend to be from senior citizen or veterans groups to trick community organizations in any particular congressional district into opposing clean energy legislation. Now we know that another fake group calling themselves Friends of Coal is actually run by a PR company and uses photos on its website that it says are average citizens, but turn out to be photos bought on a stock photo page on the web.
Rachel Maddow did a terrific job of covering this late last week. We'll have that video up at our website, greennews.bradblog.com. You got to see it. It's amazing what they how they copied and pasted.
Luckily, the public doesn't seem to be falling for the astroturfing. A new Washington Post ABC poll shows that a majority of Americans, nearly 60%, still support clean energy legislation and the Obama administration's handling of it. 52% support cap and trade policies to curb emissions, and the public overwhelmingly supports a switch to solar, wind, and electric cars by 80%. Only a small portion, just 5%, think global warming is not an issue. Speaking of solar,
there's 25,000 square miles roughly as of 2003 in the lower 48 states. If we covered that with solar panels, just a 15% efficiency, we'd produce almost enough to power the entire world.
Well, there's an idea.
Yeah, that was the inventor of solar roadways who just got a Department of Transportation grant to produce a prototype solar highway, literally solar panels embedded in roadways around the nation. The roadway would be a structurally sound solar panel embedded and connected to the grid, which would replace the petroleum-based asphalt we have around the nation.
Keep the government's hands off my roads. Read about that and much more at our website, greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Yeah, so it's the second half of the program. Who's counting? I'm certainly glad you stuck around. I think we've got another hour and a half of real fun ahead. Let's see, a couple of emails for you. Let's start with a few days ago. Our pal Michael in Norway, who finds my attempts at a Norwegian accent non-offensive and humorously charming. Well, not charming, but, well, humorous. Michael wrote in on Sunday, and I didn't get to this email yesterday because, well, I wasn't here. I mean, I was here, but God, sometimes I feel like Mr. Kimball from Green Acres. Anyway, it's Tuesday, and we'll get to Michael's letter from Sunday now. There. That's easy, isn't it? Good.
Anyway, Michael writes, I just finished listening to Friday's edition of The Horn, and I wanted to chime in with my delayed comments. All props to caller Dave for his successful Conservabot slapping. It thrills me to hear these brain farts get a run for their talking points, and I'm sure it must have been pure therapy for Dave as well. Intellectually speaking, the right wing doesn't stand much chance when we get down to dissecting their demagoguery. Emailer Joe, the foxhole atheist, certainly has a point when he says the hate speech of the right is the best weapon against them, but that is all from a rational, intellectually sound perspective. Oh dear, I'm afraid Michael gets it. By Jove. Unfortunately, I believe what you are dealing with in America, and we also do here in Norway, is a rampant anti-intellectualism. Truth, in my experience, usually is a little bit more intricate and complicated than what simplistic rhetoric ever can convey, and therein lays the dilemma. We humans have a tendency to be attracted towards the simple because it has the characteristic of being orderly and perspicacious. That is a problem when the reality-based discourse has a tendency to convey intricacy. What I'm saying, wow, can you imagine? I mean, this is just two paragraphs of the letter so far, and this is just my little editorial blurb in the middle. Can you imagine an email like this ever being read to the mouth-breathing, knuckle-dragging, the ditto heads who spend their time listening to Flush Flemball? My friends, that is the problem, and the reality-based discourse has a tendency to convey intricate... No, it doesn't work, does it? No. Anyway, Michael continues. He says, what I am saying is that even though on a rational level you may strip the arguments of your opponent down to nothing, you can unfortunately not be certain that anybody listening in will reach a rational conclusion. That allows Dave's opponent to quite simply dismiss his logical smackdown as a mere irritant, and I bet you he and his ilk, even after this confrontation, will be rolling their eyes at the prospect of being wrong. These individuals are not really interested in truth because to them the construct of their worldview is more convenient as it is easy to remember and easy to grasp. Michael, you are saying a mouthful. And every one of you who has ever confronted a wingnut knows exactly what this is like. You heard it at the beginning earlier in the program with that wingnut from San Diego saying, don't worry about health care. God will take care of it. You know, you'd like to do a little bit of the background work and find out if that guy has health care. And in other words, God took care of mine. And now we're back to what Kevin was talking about with neo-Calvinism. Michael continues, I hang on to the hope that reason always will win in the end. Though with a Conservabot noise machine as the one in America, the irrational certainly has been given an extended lifespan. How true. And in essence, I think what Michael is saying, although he has said well for himself as it is that we get in trouble because this stuff is advanced by the for-profit media who have a vested interest in making sure that the complex never gets out there. Because, look, I don't care if you work for the tiniest little TV station in West Virginia, which is about 6 miles from me, or whether you're working for WABC in New York. When you are a TV reporter and you go out to do a package, you come back, and if it's any longer than 90 seconds, it's going to get cut. Now, you can't do nuance in 90 seconds. And so, the same with the for-profit media as with the right wing. They opt for the simple answers. Well, you know, all that happened in the lower ninth ward because God wanted it that way. Well... and he's not here to argue with. Simple solution? easy to grasp. And, you know, if God's just occasionally dropping terror bombs on you, then why worry? Either, you know, if God loves you, you won't get hit. It'll just be the heathens. See? Yeah, I think Michael's nailed it on the dismount. Kate wrote in early in the program. She said, wow, I just got 5 minutes and 39 seconds of the opening today. Kate has connectivity problems. She says, you have permission to share this because I referenced my interchange with Kate. You have permission to share this from our post a few days ago. I don't have adequate connections to call the show. Besides, I don't have anything to contribute on this, the fourth anniversary of Katrina. Watching and listening to even a little bit of media this weekend confirmed that I don't have one damned thing to say that would be informative or uplifting. CNN, for a minute, they're still using the term victim. And the segments on NPR and CNN were all about revival, how NOLA is coming back. With a 15-second mention, oh, there are still neighborhoods that need a lot of work. Fade to black. And again, Kate didn't write this, but let me just throw this out there. Possibly one of the most well-done pieces about the attempt to recover in New Orleans was done by a travel show guy who talks about food. Go and watch the No Reservations episode about New Orleans. Go and watch that. It was damned good. And the nice thing about Anthony Bourdain is he doesn't editorialize, but lets you draw your own conclusion, and the conclusion that you draw is inescapable. So anyway, Kate continues, the disabled and elderly have fallen into a crack that has gotten deeper and narrower. They'll die in that crack either before or after it's been covered over with asphalt. I don't have any new stats nor numbers. Most aren't interested. This disaster has burned out the normal unaffected population. And she says, and I have nothing positive to contribute, re Katrina. Trust me, it will happen again. Nothing has changed down there. And I'm going, I hope I, yeah, there it is. I'm going back to the email just in a minute, but that reminds me of a story I found by Susie Madrack over at Crooks and Liars. Headline, the further pillage of New Orleans, shady Bush cronies sold us faulty pumps. Jesus Christ. And it references a piece in USA Today. And Susie says that it left out an important piece of the puzzle. And the story is as follows. And this goes back to the 25th of August, a week ago. Huge flood control pumps installed in New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina don't protect the city adequately, and the Army Corps of Engineers could have saved $430 million in replacement costs by buying proven equipment, a federal investigation has found. The investigation by the Federal Office of Special Counsel finds there was little logical justification for the Corps' decision to spend hundreds of millions of dollars on the untested hydraulic pumps, which are meant to empty millions of gallons of water from the below-sea-level city during storm-related floods. I will never forget as a child during my first visit to New Orleans. There was a reunion being held down there of my father's shipmates from the USS Essex. And we stayed at the Fontainebleau Hotel. And we walked all over New Orleans. And it was August, and rain would periodically come in the afternoons, just those convection pop-up showers that happen along the Gulf Coast in the afternoon
this time of year. And the streets would flood. And then, as quickly as they flooded, the streets would be clear. And coming from where I came from, I'd never seen anything like it in my life. And I guess maybe I was 10? And Dad explained that the city was below sea level. And that water had to be pumped away. A few days later, we went and saw Lake Pontchartrain. And we saw the levees that didn't hold. So when I read that, this story, I internally just screamed a little bit. Yeah, whenever it was, the New Orleans Superdome, the Louisiana Superdome, was not yet fully constructed. And no one ever dreamed of the nightmare scenario that would take place there. It just looked amazing. Because it was going to dwarf the Astrodome. Yeah, remember that. The investigation by the Federal Office of Special Counsel finds there was little logical justification for the Corps' decision to spend hundreds of millions of dollars on the untested hydraulic pumps. Emphasis on little logical justification. Susie Madrak dug around a little bit, and she says, from March 2007... Meanwhile, Senator Mary Landrieu, D. Louisiana, why they still put that D by her name, I have no flippin' idea, asked the Government Accountability Office on Thursday to investigate the Corps and the contract it entered into with Moving Water Industries Corp. You know where this winds up. 2007, remember? Moving Water Industries Corp. is owned by J. David Eller and his sons. Eller was once a business partner of former Florida Governor Jesus Christ. No, that wasn't the former Florida Governor. Former Florida Governor Jeb Bush in a venture called Bush L that marketed MWI pumps. The U.S. Justice Department sued J. David Eller in 2002, amending its complaint against Eller with the allegations that twice he flew suitcases of cash to offshore tax havens to hide his assets. This according to a story by the St. Petersburg Times. Department of Justice also alleged that MWI Moving Water Industries Corp. improperly used more than a third of a $74.3 million U.S. loan to pay a Nigerian agent for the company. In turn, that agent and other company officials paid Nigerian government officials involved in buying MWI's pumps. And hence why I came back. Why I came back to that story. When Kate wrote, trust me, it will happen again. Nothing has changed down there. By the way, for those of you scoring at home, the MWI lawsuit by the Department of Justice remains unresolved. And even so, the contract for these untested hydraulic pumps was awarded to a Bush crony. This is, of course, through the Army Corps of Engineers, which could screw up a one-car parade. It's the Army Corps of Engineers
who gave us valley fills throughout Appalachia and multi-billion gallon toxic waste sludge dams. Oh, shoot, yeah, that valley, fill it up. Because they're in charge of the permitting. And they are apparently intensely amenable and susceptible to corporate pressure applied politically. Yeah. Referring to the fires in California, our buddy William says, I know a lady who is not stupid in West Tennessee, and when I showed her photos off your website with the desert dry and barren look of mountaintop removal, she was amazed. You never see it on TV, but you do see the fires here in California. What's the difference? Both are destructive, but fires are natural. Well, you know, maybe. Some are set. Yeah. And in a natural environment, those fires don't happen the way they do. But this is not the place for the explanation of forest fire dynamics, and I'm certainly not the guy to talk about them. But you know what? Growth hasn't slowed to a standstill in Southern California, and it isn't going to. You know, when three-bedroom brick ranch homes like the one I grew up in Florence, Alabama, are going for, you know, $1 million in Southern California, there's not going to be any let-up. But among other people, Jared Diamond, the author of Guns, Germs, and Steel and Collapse, has done a brilliant job talking about these issues, the fires. And some are set, and when they are deliberately arson-based, they run as wild as anything occurring by nature. But within nature, the progress and outcome is not the same. I have friends in Southern California, and all I can do at this distance is hope that they're all right. Brad and Desi, William, other dear friends, I hope you're okay. I just hope you're okay. And this from our pal Fancy, regarding some of the religious stuff we touched on. She says, I speak for God when I say, now we're back into it. The vanity of taking the authority of God. Always remember, don't trust anyone who says, God and I agree that you plug in behavior of choice. I believe that's in Galoshes size 10. Yeah. Yeah, it goes back to the fun we had one night on the horn section. What a wonderful program that was. John Fox, Peter Godbold, and me. That was so much fun. It was exhausting, but it was fun. And we found that list of bumper stickers. And the one that has stayed with me over the course of the couple of years since is the one that says, my God hates everything I hate. What? My God hates all the same things I do. Or, if your God hates everything you do, he's probably imaginary. And that's what I was talking about when I guess I would fall under the general rubric of agnostic as opposed to full-out atheist. Because I have at least an image, and I recognize that it's an image, and I recognize that it's a function of my belief center and not my know center. But I've come to this conclusion that the universe is a living, breathing thing. Because that certainly is what all the data tends to look like. And it answers a lot of the old angels dancing on the head of a pin questions that have troubled theologians who spent their time being troubled by theological questions instead of going out and getting honest work over the centuries. You know, even Socrates had a day job, for God's sakes. And so did Yeshua.
So make no assumptions about what I do or do not believe. I simply recognize that in believing it, I have thrown reason and common sense and factual-based living to the four winds, and that I'm doing it because it comforts me. Some people are comforted by the idea of the Virgin Mary appearing on a hilltop near Mexico City or somewhere in Spain or in France or God knows where. I'm comforted by the notion of a universe that is living and breathing, and in which I am one tiny individual unit, perhaps, of a peptide chain on a molecule, on a cell, on a toenail, on a toe hair in that universe. And you know what? I'm happy with that. Our friend Jude wrote in a while back talking about the profound impact that Carl Sagan piece, The Pale Blue Dot, had had on her. And it does the same thing for me. Carl Sagan was such a brilliant man. And he did so many brilliant things, and he thought things that would give me a headache to even think about him thinking. But with that single and singular photograph taken from a space probe turning itself backward at the last instant and saying goodbye to planet Earth as it winked out of sight. And the photograph of which everything that we ever dream of doing or have done appears as a pale blue dot. Man, that will set you down the road to some significant perspective. And it certainly did for me. So that's the mailbag for this Tuesday evening. If you've got it, and you know how to reach the program, Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, @gmail.com. And, of course, you can always dial in as well. 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4. Head on. If you want to dial direct, you can do that too. 304-658-3333. You got an hour to get the conversation in, and I know how you are. You'll wait till 15 minutes before the program ends, and then all six lights will light up because I'll finally say something profound enough to make you pick up the phone. Or crazy enough, or wrong enough. Let's do this the easy way. Fire it up now, but we're going to take a break. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
Starboard, let your cry lead us all through the night.
Rising from the ashes, your light will show us the way.
Starboard, you can fly me, take me everywhere you
roaring with the wind song,
screaming through the dark, yeah.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Bob.
Yeah, that was Manfred Mann's Earth Band from the late 1970s. Just seemed appropriate given how we ended that half hour. It is 2 minutes past the hour, 56 or so minutes of good conversation left in the program. And you know the number again, 877-443-2366. And we'll get it started. Professor Sandra is on the line.
No, let's get it straight. It is really just a TA job.
Oh, no. To those impressionable youngins, you may well be Dr. Sandra.
Oh, God. Well, anyway, we're in the midst of a budget hell, a tsunami in the state school system here in California. So I go into my class. I'm like, la-di-da, coming off a summer that I was pretty isolated, not really dealing by choice, because I have to deal with so many people. When I get a chance not to, it's bliss. Call it what you may. But anyway, I walk into my class. And in a class of what's supposed to be 50, there was 110 people.
That's not a class. That's a mob.
For Government One. We're not talking about Chem 1A where you can be in a lecture. You see what I'm saying? It's Government One where there's endless reading. You see what I mean? It needs to be a class ideally of 40 at the most. Anyway, so I'm sitting here trying to process the paperwork and the never-ending really pedestrian questions, and I'm thinking, you know what, this is just going to be glorified, overpriced babysitting.
At those kind of numbers, yeah, it is. How do you have a discussion with a crowd of 100?
Yeah, so, and I also have to teach a smaller adjunct class. You know what, that smaller adjunct class so far is like 40. It's supposed to be 15. This is a class that's required to get a degree. So, you know what I mean? It's not like it can be moderated. So, I'm thinking, I don't know what the hell I'm supposed to do this semester. But anyway.
Just out of curiosity, I mean, what is a class of the, what are classes of those size? I mean, is it everybody just sit there and listen to Sandra talk? I mean, are you basically filibustering a 50 minutes to an hour and 15 minutes every class?
Well, the adjunct class, yeah, it is me helping, trying to sort them out with the reading and stuff. The actual lecture is done by, a real professor, and it's sort of broadcast in different classes. And we have the option of conducting our own discussion depending on the material and the essays that are coming through. Basically, it's designed for a lot more interaction than what I'm looking at now, because I can't organize a class of that size with any sort of substance. You know what I mean?
Not a prayer.
So I'm at home now. I'm trying to like think, yeah, this is not, I don't know what the hell this is going to be. But anywho, And that's the whole state, apparently. And as far as the schools go, it's just less for more, because they increased the fees by 30% in just the summer.
So you're paying more, and
you're getting 100 people for a intro government class, and for other classes that you need to graduate, good luck trying to get into them. Anyway. I don't know how important this is in the bigger scheme, but it's...
I have real respect for what you're trying to do in the intro government intro class, because if what we're seeing from the man on the street, so to speak, Sandra, is any indication, you got a big job, because you got this doofus holding up his pamphlet that says all you got to do is stand there and read it. U.S. Constitution. I got this book here called the USS Constitution. And you got these tenthers. Are you familiar with the tenthers now?
Oh, what's that?
Well, that's the 10th Amendment says you can't. That's their answer to everything. Want to build a highway? 10th Amendment says you can't. The secessionists in Texas are in full furor. Real, live, honest-to-God secessionists, Sandra. They had a convention. They are calling openly for the secession of Texas from the United States.
When I'm still trying to recover from the common law people versus the 14th Amendment people, which is what I am, I'm still trying to get my head around that group.
Oh, but no, the common law people are so Lyndon LaRouche.
My God. Anyway, yeah, that one just sticks in my mind. I've never even considered that separation before. But anyway, so the Texas people?
Yeah, they're tenthers, among other things. They think that the government, the Tenth Amendment, the Tenth Amendment is that sort of catch-all that amendment that says, well, you know, if the Constitution doesn't specifically enumerate the powers to the federal government, then the powers are reserved to the states.
And who's leading that? Alex Jones?
Oh, the libertarians, you know.
I'm sick of them.
Yeah. Alex Jones, the usual suspects, I don't know. Well, then again, we got the for-profit media out there, but I don't know how this. I've never seen such a broadly brushed example, Sandra, of the concept that a lie can get around the world before the truth can get its shoes on.
Well, ain't that the truth about so much? But the secession thing is so bizarre. It's like one of those video games that sort of foresee all of the U.S. breaking up. I forget the name of the video game, but it's pretty intense where the West becomes one country. And, you know, the whole thing just sort of breaks up. It balkanized and, you know.
Exactly the term I was going for. It balkanizes.
Right. And, you know, because I was like, what the, you know, but it's hard to fathom, but Texas. They can go, as far as I'm, to be honest. Isn't this, haven't we seen this show before with them, though?
Well, you know, the one thing that I find interesting is that the secession business and all this 10th Amendment garbage, it had sort of been floating out there in the bowl for a while. But it only caught fire, Sandra, after the last presidential election and after it started coming out that Sarah Palin was actually a member of the Alaska Secession Party.
Yeah, exactly. But you know what? We need to counter that with our own Ninth Amendment revival. You understand what I'm saying? The Ninth Amendment, where I can come up with decent rights and laws that are there, you know? No one talks about the Ninth Amendment enough, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, you're right. We do need a Ninth Amendment.
One of my favorite ones, you know. Yeah. Anything implied is just wonderful for those of us who think. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, there's that thinking again, and that goes back to Michael's email from Sunday.
I don't mean to be facetious. I just, you know, the 10th Amendment is just, you know, it's a hellish amendment on so many levels, and I'm sick of it. It's always popping up with these folks.
Well, just to give you an idea of what went on in Texas, there were a few secessionists who were hollering about health care reform. And this one cat, Larry Kilgore, who opposed them, turned around and told him, "You go back to the U.S. where you belong."
Come on. I don't really think the Texans realize how many of us would quite welcome them to be their own country there.
There was a gubernatorial candidate there by the name of Deborah Medina.
Oh, no, not familiar.
Me either, but I have a feeling I'm going to be hearing about her. She explained to the crowd that they understood what secession means. She said, "We're aware that stepping off into secession may in fact be a bloody war. We are aware that the tree of freedom is occasionally watered with the blood of tyrants and patriots."
Oh, as Jefferson spins, "Not from those types, please." God damn, listen, I'm still tripping on the Great White Hope comment. I realize that's been a few days.
Yeah, but I never touched on it, so it's more than wide open. I got her right here.
Yeah, that one just did my head, and I'm like, you know what? Okay, forgive me, dumbass white women. Sometimes they just really, I just want to throttle because some of them are so sheltered, they don't know what the hell they're talking about.
Yeah, and they got and imagine they got all bent about Sonia Sotomayor talking about a wise Latina.
Oh, spare me! But that, you know, and I'm thinking, well, where is Jack Johnson when we need him? Shit.
And from the historical context, wasn't Max Schmeling a great white hope? Check me, but wasn't he supposed to be the guy? Sponsored by the Third Reich and all that fun stuff.
Exactly.
You know, because the Brown Bomber was ruining boxing.
Oh Lord, yeah, no, but the fact that they brought that, you know, don't they know anything at all? I mean, that is just so offensive. You know, the whole idea of a great white hope on so many levels, I can't even begin.
Well, I love the whole thing, though. The whole quote, you know, Republicans are struggling right now to find the great white hope. This said by Representative Lynn Jenkins, a Republican from Kansas. Republicans are struggling right now to find the great white hope. And then she follows up by saying, you know, and again, this, you're right, they're morons. This is a classic case of not knowing the first rule of holes, i.e. when you're in one, quit digging. She said, I suggest to any of you who are concerned about that, who are Republican, there are some great young Republican minds in Washington, thereby implying that the great young Republican minds are all white, which they are, because, you know, the Republican Party in as it's constituted in the Congress is whiter than ivory soap.
Yeah,
and they don't have, they don't seem to notice that there might be anything out of the way.
Well, no, but you tell me, what the hell is wrong with these Republican white women? You know, I have to go there because I am constantly sort of slack jaw looking at these fools when they open their mouths. It's like, are you kidding me?
Well, but wait, you know, again, Gensu commercial. But wait, yeah. There's more. Because Michelle Bachmann is now calling for us to all slit our wrists.
What?
Got her again. Yeah. Yesterday, she went to a gathering sponsored by the Independence Institute in Denver. And it was supposed to be a personal legislative briefing. But she did everything but drink strychnine and handle snakes, okay? When she got going on healthcare reform. And this is what she said. Now remember, this is the same woman who told her Minnesota constituents to lock and load over cap and trade.
God.
Okay,
man.
Remember, you know, the call to arms to the barricades, brothers. Well, yesterday in Denver, she says, talking about health care reform, this cannot pass. What we have to do today is make a covenant to slit our wrists, be blood brothers on this thing. This will not pass. We'll make sure whatever it takes to make sure this doesn't pass. Right now, we're looking at reaching down the throat and ripping the guts out of freedom, and we may never be able to restore it if we don't man up and take this one on.
Wow.
You know, really, it's another one of those straw in the tequila bottle moments.
I mean, didn't she have a real hard time in her election, or did she win big? I can't really remember. I thought she
No. She squeaked in.
Okay, because it was pretty close. Okay. But wow, cuz she really needs to go away.
I hope they're working on that, Sandy.
Hey,
but then again, do you really want to live in a world where the Republican Party's open face is not Michelle Bachmann?
I mean, it's such a variety. You can have that idiot or the Uncle Tom Steele, whoever that fool. You can have him because he's a joke. If you listen,
you know. I can't bear to cover him anymore, Sandra.
No, but it's embarrassing because it's like, dude, brother, please. This is what I'm thinking. And I'm looking at his dumb ass. I'm like,
oh, and the rest of the white Republican Party's going, where the hell's J.C. Watts?
Oh, he's selling some shit on QVS or whatever. QVC. I don't know. trying to take care of all his kids. That one. You know.
Touche. You got me back. You know, I'm just scared to death that I'm going to scan across QVC at 3 a.m. one morning, and I'm going to see J.C. Watts hustling OU football jerseys.
And he can say I take care of my kids, okay? Please don't get me started on that guy. What a waste.
Well, you know, this is the guy whose own father said that voting for his son would be like the chicken voting for Colonel Sanders.
Oh wow. I'm sorry. Oh, that's a good one. What the hell?
No, they asked him. They said, you know, because he's a pastor and a respected man in the community. They said, you know, Dr. Watts, are you going to vote for your son? He said, I'm a Democrat. I'd be like a chicken voting for Colonel Sanders.
Well, that's right up there with Ward Conley. They did an interview because he's from Sacramento, unfortunately. And they did an interview with his family, and all his family was like, oh, no, he hates black people. He hates himself. I was like, damn, with family like that. So these black people who get out there fronting and whatever for the right, they always have something really nasty going on, you know.
They do, and I just got this email rolling in from Fancy Free. She said, I sent an email of Lynn Jenkins this morning saying that she is the great white hope. I told her she deserves the honor due her for practicing integrity and loyalty to those corporate entities that support her so generously. She is the ideal employee serving those who pay her. Her picture should hang in the halls of all insurance companies with an Employee of the Year banner and a reserved parking place in the parking lot.
Yeah, she's a looker, too. Sorry, that one. Woo! I don't know, all these folks are scaring me. They're all just popping out. But, yeah, I'll let you go because I'm sure you got somebody else to talk to. But I noticed that right now they're starting to finally come out with articles talking about how health care, to make it for-profit, is illegal in most industrial countries in the world. That's the first time I'm starting to hear that argument, which is long overdue.
It is, but you know... Yeah. I kind of hate that a little bit because the right wing will pick that. See, they've made capitalism illegal in these socialist communist countries.
Yeah,
but I mean you can see that one coming from a mile away, Sandra.
And that's why it probably hasn't been pounced on. But it's just really important that to make healthcare something other than a vehicle for, you know, profit taking. But I guess, you know, that's too much to ask.
Well, yeah, and by the way, just before you go, just to let you know, because I know you got a lot of work ahead of you. 100 students, my God, Sandra, 140 when you get down to it. I need to make it clear to you though, with all this Lynn Jenkins business, you've misunderstood her. That's what her spokes creep said. Told the Topeka Capital Journal. Yeah, you've misunderstood her because she wants to apologize for her word choice and emphasize that she had no intention of expressing herself in an offensive manner. And the spokes creep went on to say, you know, these non-apology apologies just murder me.
Like, whoever I offended, I'm sorry type of apology?
Right. There may be some misunderstanding there when she talked about the Great White Hope. What she meant by it is that they have a bright future. The bright lights within the party.
Shut up. That is hilarious. Wow.
You know, burning cross makes big white, big bright light.
God, they just digging for first, I don't know what.
Yeah, first rule of holes.
That's how, did you hear that NBC has hired that, is it one of them Bush's daughters?
No, tell me no. Tell me no.
On today's show, yeah, she's going to be doing stories on, I don't know, augmentations. I mean, I really don't know, but it's...
Literacy.
Oh, because I know she was a teacher.
Best dive bar, maybe she could go on the Travel Channel, or maybe she can compete with the Travel Channel and do best dive bars.
Oh, God, but anyway, it's just, you know, it's like, wow, that's the corporate media for you. Anyway, Bob, listen, have a good evening. I'll call when I can.
All right, Professor. I appreciate it.
Bye.
Bye. Sandra calling from
from California. 105. I mean, that's government one. That's nobody higher. Yeah, they hired Jenna Bush. Oh, Jesus. This is the part of the program where I have to drink. Can you imagine 100? I mean, government one. That's nobody higher than a sophomore. And you know, sophomoric is a word for a reason. Doing the work of the angels, Sandra. That's all I can say. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob.
How you doing, Luke?
Oh, just a fun weekend. You know how life goes. Let's see, what do we want to get on tonight? Some good ones. First of all, the thing about Jenna Bush, it's like, yeah, are they going to have the Secret Service agents along with her to make sure she can drink all she wants? You know, despite what the law may say?
Well, she's 21 now, so.
Yeah. That's true. Well, so they don't have to come out and threaten the police if they try to arrest her.
Right.
Well, let's see. The one you were talking about, was it Jenkins or Bachman, or who's the one that made the comment last week that she was talking about the insurance thing and said, tell the government to keep their hands off my body? And I bet the women over at
Narol and...
Narol, I bet they were just sitting there going, please, let's get that tape. Let's run that tape every hour. And so we're like, lady, do you realize what you just said? I bet 10-1 they could play it for Michael Steele. We could watch him change colors. This could be fun.
Ooh, he's turning plaid.
I know. well, Mel Brooks is around somewhere. Oh, well. Let's see. The Texas secession thing. I'm wondering how much of this is Kate Bailey Hutchinson's people and how much is any of the Democrats in Texas pushing this going, come on, Governor Goodhair, you either got to come out for it or against it.
Well, and there is pressure on Governor Goodhair to come out for it or against it.
That's what I mean. Apparently he just totally went into hiding this weekend. And I was saying,
anybody checked Argentina or the Appalachian Trail?
I was going to say, is he on the trail? He may actually be on the trail. That might be his best defense. Let's see. Well, good. Oh, this weekend, the one I loved when they were talking about this CIA investigation. You see, you heard what the GOP line is now, don't you? This has already been investigated. It don't need to be investigated again. You know, apparently the Bush White House investigated
itself.
And they didn't find anything. And I'm sitting there going, okay, I'll say two words, and you tell them, and let's see if they can hold their face straight. Richard Fisk. You know, there's some fellow named Richard Fisk that in the mid-90s had this investigation on this thing called Whitewater. He got done with it, said there's nothing there. And did the GOP...
Oh, that's so true, Luke.
And the GOP, they, of course, took that and said, great, we're over it.
Yep, no, done now.
Pray not. And he was a career civil servant. He was not a political appointee, unlike a fellow named Ken Starr, who was picked by a fellow named David Sindel.
Who is as big a wing nut as ever wore a robe.
Oh, yes, indeed. And his probably somewhere in the back of there, I tend to wonder, is the optional hood. But I just heard, I think it was Mary Madeline said that, and I'm just sitting there going, somebody please say the words Richard Fisk, please!
You know, the sad thing is most of America would go, who?
I know. Oh, and did you see this weekend, Mr. Kurtz was just so upset. He had to have a story on have we been celebrating or commemorating Ted Kennedy's death too much?
You are kidding me.
Oh, no. That was one of his things. Have they both devoted too much time to it? I'm sitting there going, we had 2 weeks of Reagan Ronnie. When the two words that were...
Ronald Reagan was born a poor black child.
And lost ground from there. And remember, we had to take those two words out of the dictionary for those 2 weeks called Iran-Contra. But amazingly enough, for this last week, they were able to meet Chappaquiddick a few times.
Oh, I'd say more than a few.
Yeah. But just remember, when Reagan Ronnie died, you could not mention Iran-Contra. Which, of course, according to the GOP playbook of the last 10 years, would make Ronnie a terrorist sympathizer, because he was dealing with a group called the Contras, whose favorite hobby was killing priests and nuns.
And who were they not on the terrorist list at one point in time?
Oh, yeah. At the time that he was dealing with them, they were. I mean, that's one of the reasons they got in real trouble, because they were on the terrorism list at that time, what we consider terrorists. You know, that's why they were like, no, we're not dealing with them. I don't care what those papers show. No. I tell you what, it's just been one of them weekends where you just sit there. I just got to the point, it's like, I need to turn TV off because I'm going to shoot it. So.
Yep, boy, go get me another peanut butter and banana sandwich and bring me the Elvis gun.
Okay, now I'm going to get something totally off topic, and I hope I want more people out there to listen to us.
Oh, goody, this smells like sports.
I was going to say, have you been listening to all the fun stuff about Mr. Rodriguez up in beautiful Michigan?
Oh, strap in, boys and girls. This one's going to be fun. He's sweating through his hair plugs. Oh, he is, Luke.
I've been loving watching some of the ESPN and these others on there. They're trying to talk about it without talking about it. And it's like, well, when you've had to have the AD come out and say we're doing another internal investigation.
Well, I had an email exchange with David in Tennessee, you know, because we're sports junkies.
Oh, yeah.
And he said, apparently the house in Morgantown still hasn't sold, and Rich is the only one living in Ann Arbor. Big Hair Rita is still back in West Virginia or somewhere.
She may know something.
There ain't a cheerleader safe on the campus of the University of Michigan, especially not if her hair's more than a foot and a half high and it's bleach blonde.
I was gonna say, you got to wonder, does she have something? She hired somebody up there to keep an eye on Rich? Does Rich have what they used to call him, a minder?
At this point in time, I don't know, because you know that after that, I mean, when you're Michigan and you miss going to a, I mean, you don't even get the Poland Weed Eater Bowl. When you miss out on the Poland Weed Eater Bowl or whatever it is now,
yeah.
And you've made a bowl game every year for the last 40 years, and that's a bunch of football coaches.
Well, I mean, the thing most people don't realize is, what is it now? There's 109 teams in Division One.
112, I thought.
112. And more than half of them go to a bowl game each year.
Yeah, when you don't go,
I mean, you've got to go down 60 teams to where you're getting to the point where they're not checking.
Yeah, that's like the play-in game for the NCAA tournament.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, but I got a feeling there was a come to Jesus speech. But see, just to make this clear, Rich has problems in River City. As the saying goes,
I'd love to read some of Rich's fine print and Rich's contract, because I bet there's some real fun contract wording in there.
Okay. One liner of the night. This from Ohio State devotee Sue. Rich Rodriguez is only going to dress half the team for their first game this Saturday. The rest will have to dress themselves. She'll be here all week. Try the veal.
It's on special.
But Rich has got three quarterbacks, none of which are competent to run his spread offense, and so he's got quarterback by committee. And what David in Tennessee noted was that old saying that says, when you got two quarterbacks, you got no quarterback.
No quarterbacks.
What do you got when you got three?
You're minus one.
Yeah, you're in a hole.
Oh, please. Okay.
And he's going to do quarterback by committee. I mean, didn't we see the old ball coach try that at South Carolina?
Oh, yeah. Well, you remember they did that down at Georgia for the longest while.
Yeah.
Remember they had the two. And amazingly enough, after the first quarter, they had one quarterback. But I'll tell you this, and this is also for Dave, but he can listen if he hadn't heard on his end of the world. Over here, it's just so much fun building up to the games this weekend. Because over here, all the radio people are now saying 8-4 would be a great year for Mr. Kiffin here at Tennessee, and these are the same people who a year ago told you 8-4 for Philip Wilmer was a horrible year, that he had to be run out of town on a rail.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing.
8-4 is a great year.
Yeah, I mentioned the fact earlier. I'm Ferg's first middle school football game is Thursday evening, so I will not be on the air. We've got to travel down to Montgomery, West Virginia. Ferg plays on AstroTurf this Thursday. Oh, great. Busted elbow, AstroTurf. This is going to be nice. But
tell Ferg I sympathize, because I think I told Agnes this a long time ago. I broke mine in six places when I broke mine.
Zzz.
Yeah. But there's a part of my arm isn't part of my arm. They had to take part of the bone out. I've got Teflon. Much better.
Yeah, well, Teflon doesn't set off metal detectors in airports. I got to tell you, I got the fever. I have sure enough got the fever because when we get home from the game, I don't care if Barney the dinosaur raises from the dead is on the television. I'm going to ESPN and I'm going to watch highlights from South Carolina and North Carolina State. And Oregon and them boys that play on that Smurf turf out in Boise.
But please do not readjust your set channel. Yes, indeed.
No, I watch mine with shades on. Yeah, it's the only thing that makes that blue road tolerable.
Don't look at me. I'm just so glad. I also told people that when I first saw that, I said, thank God that Doug Dickey didn't see that 25 years ago. We'd had an orange one.
Well, yeah, I was going to say that. I'm surprised that hasn't caught on, Luke, because God almighty, can you imagine – crimson carpet and volunteer orange carpet.
And you got to remember, we were one of the first schools that had that stuff, and we lived through that to the point they said, get rid of it or we're going to have to kill somebody.
Well,
that was just a mess.
Oh, the origins of that stuff were horrible. I mean, it was rug on concrete and very little beneath it. I mean, we've got artificial turf at Mountaineer Field simply because we don't have the climate or the land up around Morgantown for the sod farm that's required. I mean, they got grass at Heinz Field, and that thing, with the workout it gets between Pitt and the Steelers and the Western Pennsylvania High School Athletic Association, that thing is down to mud by late September.
Well, you know, as I said, we had one of those back in the 70s, and we had the old style to the point where if you went out there and you weren't wearing something on every inch of your skin, you might as well say goodbye to that piece of your skin.
Oh, yeah. Well, we played our intramural athletics back when I rode my dinosaur to WVU was at what was then the original Mountaineer Field that hadn't been demolished yet for the School of Business and Economics. And its turf was down there, and you couldn't – that stuff got so hot, there was not a shoe made that you would not burn your feet up in. I mean, with shoes on. I mean, like, I don't know if the professional grade turf shoes had like an asbestos layer or something in the soles, but I remember going down there and playing in, you know, the typical basketball shoes, running shoes, deck shoes, whatever, you know, just to throw frisbee or what. And if the sun was out, you would come back with burnt feet.
Well, yeah, we used to have a big old round thermometer, you know, one of those thing sitting on the field, and you would sit there every game, and I mean, it was pushing past 110. Because, like I say, the sun had hit that, and it was like going out and laying on your car.
Yeah, no doubt.
So, it's just interesting on some of this. Just
now, do the boys in orange open Saturday too?
Yeah, Western Kentucky. Yeah, you know how it is when you're playing. You got all these games. They had to fill in two here and there with some. Teams are just right up there with Florida choices.
Yeah, but look, you're in the first season of a new coach. Take nothing for granted. Cherish every victory.
I understand. But like I say, it's just interesting down here to hear all the radio jocks that were so against Phil Fulmer that are now just like, well, we may have a bad year this year, and you can't hold it against Kiffin.
No, you got to have 5 years to get the program in.
It's just, you know, it's like I say, it's just one of the things that you're just sitting there going, like I said, I figured if within 2 years, if he ain't got a winning thing, I still think every radio station in this town ought to fire every sports reporter they got. Every on-air person they got, let's put it that way. But that's just here or there, you know what I mean? But we'll see how that goes this weekend. I'm sure I'll be down in Atlanta, but I'll catch up and listen to Corso and Company.
Oh, are you going down for the game or you got business?
No. Dragon Con.
Oh, that'll be fun.
Yeah. You know, me and 30,000 of my friends are getting together, having a party. We've taken up 8 hotels.
God, that thing must be huge.
It is so huge, it's beyond. It's too huge, but that's just the way it is. It's like, we keep telling them, please quit holding this in five or six hotels. Let's go back over to, you know, kiss the Admark's butt.
But if Dragon Con has 8 hotels in Atlanta, where are they going to put all the Alabama boosters with all the $100 handshakes for the game with Virginia Tech?
You got to understand, they've sold these hotels out 6 months ago. These hotels have been, if you don't make your reservation by the 1st of March, the hotels are sold out for this weekend. Because we've got the Hyatt, the Hilton, the Sheraton, the Marriott, the Westin.
You've got the Peachtree Plaza?
Yeah. Oh, we got downtown Atlanta. I mean, I wouldn't doubt there's...
Well, I guess all them Bama boosters are going to road trip.
They'll be staying out at the airport, I guess.
That and Lord knows where they're going to put the Hokie faithful, or as we like to call them, the Gobblers. Hey, that was their nickname. We didn't do that to them.
Oh, no. Hey, I meant to ask you something about Virginia while we're talking about that. What is going on with this Republican running for the governorship over in Virginia? Has he decided he doesn't want to be governor now? Is going to short circuit his campaign?
I've seen a couple of pieces of lunacy. Which one in particular are you referring to?
Where he's talking about women shouldn't be working and all this.
No. That's to bring that. No, that's not bad strategy. Oh no, Luke, that's good strategy. Come on, you're in East Tennessee.
Well, I know that, but I'm just saying, you know, he's leading right now, so I'm sitting there going, why are you even opening your mouth?
Because you gotta keep that wing nut, mouth breathing, knuckle dragging the base whipped into a strict non-swigging fury.
So the last thing I saw, that he had like a 10-point lead on the Democrat, Deeds. I think it's the guy's name, and I'm sitting there going, you're 10 points ahead. Why are you going out there now taking the gun, going, which toe don't I need next?
No, I know, and the mainstream Republican Party's going, shut up!
Somebody get a pillow, put over his head! I know, it's just one of the things.
But I wonder if even the Fundy women will go, wait a minute, I kind of like my job.
Oh, well, the one you told, you know, a little while ago, this thing about Jebby, I'm just curious why that ain't getting a whole lot more press. You know, about this.
Well, and that's the whole point. You know, Susie Madrack over at, or maybe at Madrack, come on, names. You know, Smith, bless her heart. She pointed out at the top of the post at Crooks and Liars, she said, you know, USA Today missed all the fun in the story.
I'm sitting there going, you know, if you're sitting there going, you know, we bought stuff that essentially we, you know, it's sort of like the Air Force, you know, buying parts and setting them out on the tarmac. You know, it's like, so now we bought pumps that aren't going to work, so we're going to have to buy new pumps to replace these pumps.
Right.
And like I say, it's one of those things that when you get behind all this, and you, like you say, and pull the curtain back, it's like, well, there's Jeb's fingerprints. You know, Jeb, let's talk about these.
Well, you know, the only thing that surprised me when I read that story,
I'm assuming.
Luke, the only thing that surprised me when I read that story is that Neil and Marvin weren't in it, too.
Well, I have no doubt Neil's somewhere behind it. As I say, you remember any place to make an illegal dollar, Neil Bush's hands are somewhere on it. You'll find that fingerprint somewhere.
What? You mean when you go to Thailand, every room doesn't have a hooker in it?
I mean, I'm sorry, but you know what I mean? You got to wonder how much money Pappy and them have spent keeping Neil's name out of the papers. You know what I mean? Because, dear Lord, from what I understand about this guy, I mean, it's like you're just sitting there going, can somebody please put Seymour Hersh on him? Come on, Seymour, this is the one you really ought to be reporting on. This one you could have some fun with.
You were born for this one, Cy.
I mean, this will keep you going for the next 10 years. I mean, you ain't going to have to do a thing. I mean, just unfortunately, the problem is you probably will be in a grand jury for a while. But other than that, because like I say, you know, or is he even still living in town or in the country? Or is Neil still staying out of the country? Or does he have some problem about coming back? Because like I say, every time you hear about him, he's always in another country.
Yeah, Dubai.
Or Australia or Thailand or somewhere, you know, or the Philippines or whatever. And you're sitting there going, is there some warrant that we don't know about that maybe Neil can't come home?
No, that's just the Beast and Poppy saying it. Well, what was that? Yeah, that old phrase from the turn of the century, a remittance man, where you take the well-to-do ne'er-do-well son of a powerful family and you just send him abroad and make sure. Listen, son, as long as you don't come home, the checks will find you.
stay out of the country. Don't come around. Don't let your picture be taken. You're the one that every time a picture's taken, hold the newspaper up in front of your face. That's why they're always carrying a newspaper in one hand, so when the photographer comes up, they can pull the paper up in front of their face so that you could, the whole thing is Neil Bush behind paper. We don't want you identified. Well, I'll tell you, bud, it's 20 till. Let me let you have some other people get on because I know you got some more people to talk to.
All right, Luke, good hearing from you. And enjoy. When do you head out for Atlanta?
Either late Thursday or too early Friday.
Either one of which is going to be, but you're going to have fun.
Well, one of those things, I got to get down there early. You know what I mean, on Friday to get.
Do you have a hot list for to see and to do?
Oh, well, it's one of those things. They put out their schedule, and I've got the yellow marker ready, and now I have to go through and see which ones clash with each other, because the problem is it's so big now that there's two or three things happening in the same hour that you want to go see, and you have to search and see if it's got a duplicate the next day or something, you know, so you can go schedule it out so you see a little bit of everything. I finally get to see the last of the original cast of Star Trek, finally.
Oh, wow.
I'll be a full-size geek now. I've seen everybody but Nimoy, and he's going to be at this one.
Got your ears?
Yep. Ready to go.
Oh, my God. Well, Luke, enjoy yourself, brother.
You have a weekend.
All right.
Bye.
Bye now. A little college football, a little sci-fi interlude. It can't just be all the sackcloth and ashes all the time now. This in from our buddy William. Subject line, this destruction of the planet has been a never-ending process. When I was 9 in 1958, we moved to what was farmland, converted into an unincorporated area with a few homes, and we could see for miles. It was not long before many more homes sprouted up, and each had their own drilled well for water. There was a creek that supported turtles and fish and frogs and assorted wildlife, clear water, and a habitat for who knows how long. All it took to kill this was a few new homeowners to run a pipe for their clothes washers to relieve themselves of soap right into the creek. One day is all it took to come to find bloated dead bodies of said wildlife. To top this off, that very year in public grade school, we each had the assignment of designing a city. I got most of it done, but could never figure out where to place the garbage produced by each home, and even worse, where was the water to come from and how long would it last? That creek kept coming into my mind in vivid realism. This has never ended, and who knows what sort of water was drawn up these 1,200-foot-deep wells. It was farmland, after all, and they used a full-on blast of any pesticide and herbicide known to man, and water does drain into the well water with the mix of this toxic swill. Who knows now what we've really got? And I get, because I am so close to issues here in Appalachia, that's where my focus tends to be. But that's, nobody's safe. And the very thing, the very blessed thing, the single most essential item to continued human habitation of the planet, water, is the thing that is made most scarce, in most cases, by little more than the full-on drive of the search for holy profit. I mean, well, you know, one of my favorite pair of movies. The first one, of course, is much better than the second one. But the first Chinatown. Water. It's about water. And what a brilliant film it is. You know, Jack Nicholson, Faye Dunaway. She is my sister. She is my daughter. But it, water, so ubiquitous that we barely even think about it. Water that can cover a city in a matter of minutes and leave people floating face down in it. Water
that should be benign and clean and available for bathing our little ones, washing our clothing, and most importantly, drinking. It's not safe. It's not safe. And why? Why? Because we are obsessed and I think that's, or at least some portion of the culture is obsessed, some very minute portion of the culture, some very minute, well-funded. You know, what the hell do they care? They'll bring water from Fiji to drink. The rest of us, however, good luck with that. Healthcare, you know, at this point, honest to God, I think I'm just sort of in a wait and see mode. I don't know about you, but and maybe this was the intent of the right wing to just burn us out. Is there anybody out there where healthcare is concerned who does not understand that the solution to the problem is universal single payer? Period. That, as Sandra mentioned, okay, if it takes as many people as the insurance industry has to maintain health care in this country, couldn't those people be put to work in a universal single-payer system? I mean, I keep hearing this business about 1/7 of our economy. Well, if that's the case, those folks are needed to administer a new universal single-payer system. It's just a different name on the check. But at least you always know the government's check will clear, unlike a for-profit system that's heavily invested in maybe, I don't know, credit default swaps. Again, the same as with the reference to water. It is a very tiny, minute portion of our country that has a vested interest in making sure that you and I continue to get substandard health care. And those would be the CEOs and executive VPs and CFOs and COOs, the cuckoos, of the for-profit health care industry itself. Every last iota of all of this is dedicated. This whole effort is for nothing more than protecting the well-padded wallets of what are probably not 1,000 people in this country. Bending the national will to the perceived continued well-being of 1,000. Okay, so it's 10,000. Maybe it's 50. If it's 100,000 people, what percentage of 100,000 people demanding that the rest of 300 million do their bidding? How is that anything resembling democratic? How is that representative of the greater good of this country? Or what's referred to as, in Article 1 of the Constitution, as the general welfare of the country. How is the general welfare of the country served by withholding decent health care from working people and the poor in America, the working poor? How is the general welfare of this country served by continuing to skew the scale in favor of a minute percentage. At best, one-tenth. Let's see, one-tenth of it. One-tenth of 1/300th of the population of this country. How does that serve the general welfare? I'm stymied. You know, I was off the air last night. My guts were acting up. You know, I've got that congenital birth defect, and you know, sometimes it's not fun. And I went downtown to try to get something in the way of relief. You know, some Pepto-Bismol shooters, if you will. Agnes played Pepto-Bismol quarter bounce with me. Kidding. But we have a gigantic, I mean ginormous, American flag at a veterans memorial made of bricks with names cut into the bricks and my father and uncle's and grandfather's name are in those bricks. And the ginormous American flag was at half-mast for Senator Kennedy. And I was pleased. And I got to thinking about why we do half-mast for great people. And it is so that people seeing the flag at half-mast will remember that a great person, or a person who gave great good, or all they had to this country, had gone on. And if you think about it, to live a life in such a way that that would be done when one goes to whatever the next thing is to have lived a life, hopefully, fully and well. Of course, they put the flag at half-mast for no good grease-headed dirtbags like Ronald Reagan. And they'll do it for Poppy Bush, too, and eventually for George W. Remember always the words of Robert Burns, the best-laid plans of mice and men gang aft a glee. But then I find this afternoon, and this is what we'll close on, just as a reminder of the shameless god-awfulness of the right wing. Jan Schakowsky, a Democrat from Illinois, had a town hall meeting last night. There were 2,000 people there. It was an overflow crowd that spilled all the way out onto the sidewalk outside, according to Josh Calvin of Progress, Illinois. Jan Schakowsky addressed health care and made reference to Senator Kennedy. You'll hear it.
You know, Ted Kennedy had said that this was the great issue of his life. Great issue of my life. This is really the issue.
Did you hear it? Did you hear those miserable gut bucket right wingers boo the name of Senator Kennedy? Representative Eric Massa in New York asked for a moment of silence to remember Senator Kennedy. And many of the right-wing thugs in attendance shouted throughout the 10 seconds of silence. In Texas, they are actively talking secession. This is the America that we live in. And the question is, of course, what we will do about it. Thanks, everybody, for joining in. I hope you'll join us tomorrow evening for prayer meeting. Be nice to have one and actually do prayer meeting tomorrow. Last week, it was Senator Kennedy's passing, and it was inappropriate. September has begun. We have a ton of fundraising to do between now and September the 30th. Lord God, it would be nice to get to the $2,000 amount that we struggle so mightily to raise every month. We are constantly on the ropes, and we are on the ropes again. This effort that is the horn is not guaranteed from one month unto the next. If you want there to be an October, well, you know where the PayPal button is, and the snail mail address is there too. And Lord knows we need the help. So thanks, everybody. Thanks to the chat room moderators, to our news ninjas, bloggers. Thanks to Peter Godbold, to John Fox, and Ben Birch. Thanks to Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org for their efforts at keeping this going. They are the hardest working, bravest people I know. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.